Now we look at the other side of the counseling scene, namely those statements made by the counselee. We will be talking about basically two kinds of statements. The first kind is the kind that moves the counseling along, one that helps do the work that the counselor and counselee have come to do. The second kind of statement is the opposite of that, and it would involve stalling or thwarting or frustrating the work of counseling. We have two categories here, working statements and resisting statements. When we talk about resisting, we are making no assumptions about the counselee's intentions. We fully believe that he is there because he wants help. However, he brings with him to the counseling situation all his usual ways of avoiding pain and fear and threat that the situation may generate for him. We might say they are very human ways. This causes him to resist the painful, fearful, threatening work of counseling. Let's look now at some of the working statements that the counselee might make. The first category we call exploring responses. When a counselee says,
I've never really thought about how I felt in that situation. Let me see.
And then proceeds to examine feeling in an imagined or a real situation, that's an exploring response. The work of counseling is going on. He is thinking new thoughts about the situation, trying to figure it out, examining his own motivation, his own emotion. Exploring statements provide some of the more interesting moments in counseling, and in that the counselee is working at the growing edge of his understanding. It can be very useful for him to do this. The counselor may wish to encourage the counselee by perking up a bit, looking more interested. You will honestly be more interested and might just let that show. The second kind of positive working response is a remembering response. A counselee may say,
I don't remember the whole episode, but I remember some bits and pieces. Let me tell you those, and maybe more will come.
What she's doing is taking clear memories and talking about them, and in the process, re-remembering other pieces of the situation which she has forgotten. This kind of remembering can be a somewhat frightening experience, and the counselee may need some support along the way. If the counselor notices this beginning to happen, he might say so. That in itself can be supporting. A third category of working statement is a reliving statement. This is like remembering, but it has added to it a stronger emotional component. The counselee may say,
I remember what it was like. It was just awful. Everyone was looking at me, and I didn't know what to say. And then I started to choke up, and I couldn't even talk.
And you notice, as she speaks, that she's really experiencing the emotions that were hers the first time around. Once again, strong emotional impact is upsetting to many people, and our counselee may need some support as she relives this experience. A fourth category of working statement is an exposing statement. This occurs in a situation where a person makes himself vulnerable. He tells you something about himself that he wouldn't readily admit to a stranger. Generally, this has to do with either acts or emotions from the past that the counselee feels ashamed of. These might be emotions directed towards others or those directed towards himself. For example, the counselee might say,
at times, I really feel left out of things. I feel as though I'm terribly lonely, and that's because I'm ugly and weird.
Such a statement exposes one to the kind of reaction that might have occurred on the playground when this person was younger, when following such a statement, the other kids would say, you are weird, ha ha ha. Of course, that's not going to happen in the counseling room, and the counselee needs to learn this from experience. Again, an exposing statement like that might well require some support from the counselor. Patient listening is awfully good support. Some of the listening responses would be helpful here. The fifth category of working statement is venting. This is the conventional blowing off steam. it can be very necessary as a part of the process if we're to get beyond it and down to something that can be managed. Name-calling, fist-pounding, tears, loud angry talk, or the opposite kind of emotional signals, twisting, tightness, grimacing, stiff, rigid, punctuated speech, can all be very appropriate in the counseling room when some important venting is going on. The counseling might say,
I get so angry just thinking about it. It was so unfair of him to take advantage of that situation. It was just lousy and crummy, too.
That's venting. Again, following some venting statements, the counselee might feel quite vulnerable, having exposed some things he regards as rather nasty to the counselor. To discover that such nasty feelings are not at all that unusual might be helpful. The counselor might say, angry feelings are really not negotiable. They're just there in all of us. When the counselee is working and making noises like these we've been talking about, there's generally no great need for the counselor to do much other than listen and support. The listening responses and the theological supporting responses would be entirely appropriate. Being aware of the counselee's feelings of vulnerability is a rather important item for the counselor. Too much support can make people feel just as uncomfortable as too little, so it is best dealt out in measured doses. We've been talking about the working responses, exploring, remembering, reliving, exposing, and venting. Now let's have a look at the resisting responses on the part of the counselee. These are the ones by which he attempts to avoid or divert the work of counseling. The first category we want to look at is denial. People just say, it ain't so. Suppose now that you've been talking with your counselee about her feelings towards her 20-year-old daughter. You have just tried what you thought was a low-level interpretation and said that it sounded to you as though sometimes she's rather angry with her daughter. She responds and says to you,
you always seem to expect me to have angry feeling toward my daughter. Pastor, that surprises me. I love her very much. Perhaps more than I ought to. I am not angry. I just get so concerned when she can't seem to find a God-pleasing way to live her life.
Okay, Pastor. Where do you go from there? Turn the machine off now and write a response to that. How did you handle it? Did it make you a bit defensive? You might want to rephrase and try a milder interpretation using the word upset rather than the word angry, which seems to be unacceptable to her. Angry tends to rouse her defenses. Or you might want to try a more direct confrontation now and talk about her angry feelings towards you. She did sound a little angry, didn't she? Or you might want to talk about how the daughter's finding of a God-pleasing way to live her life is really her task and not the task for mother to perform. Or, since there seems to be a control issue involved here, you might want to confront that rather directly and suggest that this lady stop trying to run her daughter's life. In any event, denial is rather difficult to deal with, and it should signal to the counselor the size of the task he has to perform. Let's move on now to another kind of resisting response. Suppose that our counselor has been working with this lady for some 9 or 10 hours. She comes regularly, she's always on time, she follows all his suggestions, and she thinks he's just wonderful. Imagine that it's the beginning of the counseling hour. Our counselor has just made a brief speech about their 12-session contract, and how this is hour 11, and that there will be one more hour next week, and then they will quit, as previously agreed. He has given her his evaluation of her progress. She had wanted to be happier, and he had suggested that she could be more active, which she tried for a while with some success. However, The last 2 weeks, her reports have not been quite so happy. Now she says,
Pastor, when I think about coming in here and talking to you like this, I feel so small and alone. You just can't be deaf to a need like mine. I can't make it alone.
All right, Pastor, turn off the machine and respond to that one. Did that have a familiar sound to it? Did it make you feel good? Did it possibly make you feel too good? Because I'm going to call that a dependent response. She's telling the counselor that she really can't get along without him. A number of the listening responses would be appropriate for this. Merely reflecting to her how she feels would be a first step. Our counselor might say, "You are depending on me." Challenging the depth and importance of this dependence might be a reasonable next step to do. He could say, "You feel some dependence, but you really know that you could get along without me." A linking, confronting interpretation with past or present dependency feelings might be helpful. He might say, "You are leaning on me in much the same way that you try to lean on your husband." Dependency feelings in counseling are very common and need to be labeled and confronted if short-term counseling is to be effective. Suppose now that your counselee has just told you a lengthy story about an argument with her 20-year-old daughter. Suppose you had said, "Okay, that's the story. How do you understand it now?" You are probing for what all this has meant to her and how she feels about it, but instead you get an answer like this.
"Oh, Pastor, I understand it perfectly. My parent keeps taking over every time my adult tries to talk to my daughter's adult, and her child keeps responding to my parent. It's a cross-communication that usually escalates anger on both sides. It sure helps a lot, though, to be able to explain it all in TA language."
Okay, Pastor, turn off the machine and respond to her. What you probably know is that it doesn't help much at all to explain it in TA language because she's intellectualizing. Other kinds of language could be substituted for the transactional analysis language. She could talk about ego, superego, and id. She could talk about her good self and her bad self, or she could explain this behavior in terms of unresolved complexes or developmental crises. In the final analysis, which set of words she chooses to use doesn't make a great deal of difference because what she's doing is avoiding the feeling side of her being. She could also talk about how the devil makes her do it, or how about her old evil flesh gets in the way, and make it all sound as though she is a helpless pawn of forces outside her. A reflective statement at this point might be a low-key way of challenging her thought that it really helps a great deal to be able to talk about it in this way. You might say, "You feel it really helps you to understand it in these terms?" Or you could probe a bit and say, "Can you tell me how it helps to understand it in these terms?" Most likely those two would be too low-key to get anywhere, and you might be much more interested in interpretation at this point. A labeling response that calls this intellectualizing, or a head trip, if you will, might help a bit more. You might try a confrontation that says, "I don't think this helps very much at all." Or you might pick up on her word anger and ask her to tell you about the anger as she feels it, and to make sure she talks about her anger and not her daughter's. Many people in our day and time are intellectualizers. We all do it some. It's part of our world to want to know and to understand things, and we build theories and systems about how and why. In fact, there can be some real advantage in a person understanding his internal emotional workings. Where the trouble comes is when intellectualizing becomes a substitute for feeling and expressing feeling. That's not going to work. Let's move along now to another kind of resistance. Suppose you've been working with a lady and her husband for some 3 hours about their marital difficulties, and in order to get all the cards out on the table, you had suggested that one alternative among several open to them was divorce. At this point, she responds to you by saying,
"I'm surprised that a pastor would feel that way about something the Bible clearly says is wrong. Doesn't the Bible say that divorce is sin? People told me you had some different ideas, and I said, give him a chance to prove himself. Now I see what they mean, and I must say I'm disgusted."
"Okay, Pastor, can you get out of this one? Turn off the machine and write down your response." I call this an attacking response on her part. It tends to make the counselor defensive. You might be tempted to make an elaborate speech about your personal theology of marriage and divorce that probably wouldn't be very productive at this point. A simple reflective statement might be helpful. You could say, "You feel as though I'm pushing you in a direction you don't want to go," or, "The thought of divorce really upsets you." Or a probing statement might help, like, "I wonder if you can tell us why divorce upsets you so." She also might feel pretty vulnerable right about this time, too, and that might be what's triggering her attack on you. If you could say, "You're upset, and I'm glad you let us know that. It tells us we're talking about some things that are terribly important to you," this could be a kind of supportive help. A labeling interpretation might also be appropriate. You might say, "You sound afraid when you talk like that." Or a linking interpretation which says, "The uneasiness and anger you feel right now is similar to the uneasiness and anger you feel when your husband goes on his hunting trip in the fall." Or you might want to use a structuring statement at this point and say, "We're not here really to talk about marriage in general or divorce in general. We're here to talk about your marriage." Another category of response, somewhat like the attack, but perhaps a bit more difficult to deal with, would be the following. Again, suppose a marriage counseling situation in about the sixth interview. Things have not been going well. There's been no striking improvement in the marriage, and at this point, the wife says,
"It just isn't working. I mean, we come here every week and try to do everything you say and nothing happens. I said to Fred when we first started, maybe we should go to a psychiatrist or at least a social worker. But he said, let's try the pastor. I guess pastors just don't know enough about helping people."
All right, Pastor, respond to that one. Turn off the machine and write down your response. How did you handle it? A reflective statement might help. "You feel like we're not getting anywhere." Or a probing that would suggest that she might have more to say about her frustrations. Or an instructive comment that would ignore the personal barbs in her statement for you and let her know that marriage counseling is very hard work for the people being counseled. Part of what makes it hard work is that it's frustrating. Or labeling or a linking kind of interpretation might be helpful. Since this attacks your expertise, a strong temptation would be to defend it and talk about how many successful marriage counseling cases you've handled and how much training you've had. Or on the other hand, you might choose to poor mouth yourself and talk about how you haven't really had any training at all at this and you're just a good guy who's trying to do the best you can. The pastor's own personal feeling reaction could very easily get in the way right about at this point and cause some real difficulties in the counseling procedure. She is indeed talking about her frustrations, and she's also attacking you. No question about it, she's attacking you, and none of us likes that. For the sake of your own cool in this counseling situation, it might help some for you to label that and to say, Mrs. Johnson, you're unhappy with your situation, and now you're attacking me. Do you feel I failed you? This would also be a time to talk about the structure and your contract with these people. If a sizable part of this lady's emotional problem is expressing emotion, it might be a time to cheer a bit and really surprise her and say some sanctioning noises about her new ability to express emotion. You might say, for example, "Finally, I think we're getting somewhere. Do you know what you just did, Mrs. Johnson? You talked about your emotions. That's what we need to do in here. Now let's look at it." One thing is rather certain. With this direct a statement from Mrs. Johnson, even though her barbs are somewhat hidden, they are there without any doubt, and one needs to do more than nod or grunt in response to a statement like this. Let's look now at another kind of response. Let's say that this is interview number 8 of a 12-session contract with a married lady who is 32, and she says,
"Oh, Pastor, you're so warm and understanding. I just wish Fred wasn't such a dummy. You know what he did last night? He came to the dinner table in his undershirt. I thought all week about coming here today. It's silly, but it took me 3 hours to get ready. I took a long bath and I did my nails, and I find myself thinking about you a great deal these days."
Respond to that one, please. Turn off the machine and respond. This lady's approach might be more threatening than the direct attack or the demeaning kind of response. I would call this seductive. She's letting you know that she likes you very much. That can be flattering. It can also be frightening. You might respond with some instruction. For example, you might say, "People in counseling frequently have strong feelings about their counselor. Sometimes those strong feelings are very negative, and sometimes they are very positive." That lets her know, somewhat indirectly, that you're not going to take all this at face value, as though it had been said in a dark cocktail lounge. Possibly, you might want to be reflective and then add some instruction to it and say something like this, "It sounds to me as though you find yourself liking me." Then reassure her by saying, "Of course, you know, we have an understanding with each other," and you add some structuring statements about the kind of relationship you have as her counselor and as her pastor, and that no other kinds of relationships are really possible or desired by you. If this kind of thing continues and persists, you may need to be more directive and possibly even demanding and tell her that you find it impossible to work with people who feel this way about you, and that you need then to refer her to Pastor Sauerbraten, who's 72 and lives down the street and is a very skilled and accomplished counselor. One thing you probably don't want to do is to believe her wholeheartedly when she talks about how marvelous you are. Your own wife has better data on that and can tell you how marvelous you really are. Another category that pastors see a fair amount of would be the following. Imagine a lady who is 35 years old, and this is the first time you're seeing her in counseling, and she says,
"I just can't go on anymore. I could barely get out of bed this morning. The house is a wreck. Everybody hates me. I'm a mess. It's no use."
Turn off the machine now and write your response to that one. What we have here is a statement about a depressed mood. She is telling you that she feels terrible and hopeless. She needs support. She needs understanding. She needs a push, and she may need a referral to someone. The support could come in a whole variety of kinds of sentences. Theological support might be very appropriate when the pastor says something like, "You know that God does not forsake us even in the valley of the shadow of death." If you wish to have more of this kind of verbalization, a simple reflection might very easily keep it going. The pastor could say, "You feel just awful, don't you?" Or, "You sound like you're getting close to the end of your rope." This would keep her talking and she might begin to give you some of the details you need in order to evaluate the depth of her depression. A probing response would also be appropriate. You will want to know how well she is functioning. You could ask, are you still doing your work? Do you cook the meals? Do you do the shopping? Or if the lady is employed, are you still going to work every day? You might also want to probe about eating, sleeping, weight gain or loss. For example, sleeping 12 hours instead of 8 or 3 hours instead of 8 would be a pretty strong signal that this is a sizable difficulty. Or an unintended loss or gain of 10 pounds in the last month should start you thinking about referral, as should any other radical departure from usual functioning. Since people don't understand depression well generally and tend to think all kinds of guilty, self-incriminating, and self-punishing thoughts when they are depressed, a labeling interpretation which identifies the difficulty not as sin or personal worthlessness, but as a depressed mood might be helpful. Finally, if our pastor has evaluated this depressed mood to be not of the magnitude that he should refer, then he may want to be directive about activity and suggest to this lady that she, by all means, must not only continue her present level of activity, but must work more and begin getting some new positive input. Do something she enjoys. He might say to her, for example, tough as it is to get out of bed, you must get out of bed at the regular time and you must do your work. Push yourself. And then we ought to get something going for you that's fun. There should be some fun in your life. When was the last time you went to lunch with some of your girlfriends? Or when's the last time you and your husband went out to dinner alone? She needs something to look forward to, hopefully something more than her next appointment with you. Let's look now at another kind of situation. Suppose it is interview number 3, and this time with a lady who's 40 years old and who says,
I try so hard, and then somebody always comes along and messes it up for me. Last night it was my in-laws again. They took his side against me. Even some of the kids chimed in. Why am I always the one?
All right, Pastor. Respond to that, if you will. Shut off the machine. I call this a blaming response. She is acknowledging that she has all kinds of troubles, but they're all somebody else's fault. Just reflecting that much might help her to see it, to say to her, you do have a lot of trouble, but it sounds like they're always somebody else's fault. Or you might probe a bit and add, are you sure they are always somebody else's fault? Or it could be more directly confronting and say, it can't all be somebody else's fault. What part do you contribute? Or a very simple structuring statement might help here. Our pastor might say, let's talk about what you can do differently. Now let's look at one last kind of response. Imagine a situation in a first interview where a 45-year-old lady says,
but I guess the Lord somehow means it for my good. After all, he didn't put us here to enjoy ourselves. This thing with Fred is just my cross to bear.
How do you respond to that in the first interview? Turn off the machine, please, and respond. There's a fair chance that this lady is using her theology to avoid making any alteration in her life. She comes to you for counseling, and now what she's expecting from this statement is a response on your part that would sanction the whole works and that would say, yes, indeed, Fred is your cross to bear. I strongly doubt if you would really want to agree with her on that. Behind this statement are a number of assumptions, one of which is that your brand of piety is the same as hers, which might not be the case at all. The question confronting you is, do you really want to take this bull by the horns or not? A simple reflective statement that says, you feel that that is your cross to bear might help her to see what she's really doing with this. Or you could make a clarifying statement which says, Mrs. Johnson, I think of God as a heavenly Father who loves us, yet you seem to think of God as one who's given you a heavy cross to bear. you would be adding your own theology as a corrective to hers. A low-level labeling interpretation might be helpful, in which you would say, sometimes I wonder if you're using your religious ideas to help you keep things just the way they are. Or you might wish to be directive and let her know that you have heard her pious talk, but that you wished her now to consider other ways of doing things. You might say, okay, you feel that Fred is your cross to bear. I'm not sure I agree with that, but could we consider ways that you might alter things with Fred? We've been looking at a number of counselee statements and at some of the varieties of responses possible for pastoral counselors. We've looked at working statements in which the counselee is doing what he came to do, statements that are exploring, remembering, reliving, exposing, and venting. And we've looked at resisting statements in which the counselee is not doing what he came to do, denial, dependent statements, intellectualizing, attacking, demeaning, seductive, depressive, blaming, and religious statements. I hope this might help you and your counselee stay on the right track.